afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Monday, February 26th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody. Happy Mad Monday.
Mad Monday. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Remember
mad,
that
mad,
movie?
Mad, mad, mad market. Yeah. Our favorite ride at Disney World with the kids back in the day.
let's see. Where am I going to go? I was going to go to the market prices today, and can't go to Disneyland today, but I can go to the market prices. And which one were you at? The one in Florida?
Yes, never been to the one Anaheim.
I was just the opposite for me. I was the one in Anaheim, and I was supposed to go to the one in Florida this year, but unable to make it. Work calls, and for this year anyway. And so gold today, first thing this morning, I turned on the Bloomberg, and I was happy to see that gold was up $10. However, couldn't maintain that level, but we're still up $5 today at $1,333, up $5 at $1,333. Silver was up 10 cents today at $16.70. Platinum was up 4 at 1,003. And palladium was up 14 at 1,059. The USDX today was weaker earlier, down 0.06 at 89.84. I think they like that dollar holding there at that level. And crude oil was up 42 cents today at 63.97. And the Dow, the Dow is up almost 500 points today, and it's like, on what? On what? On debt. That's what it's up. Just remember, every tick that the Dow goes up, that's another deeper in debt that corporations and everyone else is getting into. Up 398 points today at 25,708. The NASDAQ was up 84 points at 7,421. The S&P was up 32 at 2,779. And, of course, the 10-year yield is getting weaker, 2.86 on the 10-year yield. Euro was a little stronger, 123. And, you know, it's the fear and greed index is still trading at 18 in the extreme fear level, but, you know, that's not impacting the markets at all. It's really not a whole lot that I saw. I mean, there's a lot of discussions. I mean, all these headlines, Dave, is just headlines. When, you know, it's kind of like the economy, you know, it's these headlines, but there really isn't any fundamentals to support the headline. You know, it's just a bunch of, you know, he said, she said, no names, possibilities, maybe, suppose. I mean, and it's just like, okay, get to the point. Oh, there is no point in your article. And, you know, I saw a big headline where they were talking about, you know, our trade agreements was Axios. And they're talking about the trade agreements. And, you know, half of the administrations of Trump's closest advisors, you know, don't want it. The other half do. And it was all based on, it's like, okay, so what's the point? You know, where are you? You know, it's kind of frustrating when you're trying to follow things through. And many times, Dave, that's why I stick with the fundamentals, because the fundamentals will bring you the truth. And they really aren't, you know, they're much, you know, the so. Anyway.
Well, it seems the only thing more hedged or as much hedged as U.S. paper markets these days are any articles written about them. you know, it's people, I think, even I think the vast majority of people don't understand why the markets are acting as they do. They're coming up with reasons, but I'm not sure that half of them believe what they're writing. Be that as it may, another day, another drama.
And I get it to some degree. They hopped on this train, and they have to, you know, they have to go along with it. They hopped on, and nobody's really hopping off until it crashes. And we'll see how long that train goes. But new vehicle sales in the United States will be 4% lower in February. And again, it's just another sign that the American car market peaked back in 2016 and 2017. The total sales are expected to reach 1.275 million. Fiat, Chrysler Automobiles, and Ford Motor Company are expected to post the largest drops. You have manufacturers with a large number of sedan nameplates have been hurt by the buying public moving to sport utility vehicles and crossovers. And neither one of these companies has a lineup to match this trend. And February is typically in the bottom 3 months of the year for vehicle sales, which makes sense as much of the market waits for the spring selling season. And of course, the number of selling days in the month is unchanged from last year, so the expected decline is not calendar driven. But there is some indication that maybe the Winter Olympics, can influence weaker performance relative to a normal February because more people stay home to watch them. But you know what, Dave? Every what? Report that I've read, the NBC, they've had the worst viewership
in many Olympics.
In many Olympics. So people aren't staying home to watch them. So I don't know if those that bring up that excuse will be able to keep that. But the success in the car industry has come down to a fight for market share, and the rising tide that lifted all the ships is gone, at least for now.
Yeah, well, Melody, some business leaders and analysts believe we ought to stop saying the economy is in recovery and instead should start saying it's in a boom, to which we reply, huh?
How about bubble?
Well, whatever it is, whatever you call it, small business leaders are beginning to point more and more to measures of business optimism, which is tracked by the National Federation of Independent Business, which is at all-time highs. Business investment as a percent of GDP is almost as high as it's been since the Great Recession 10 years ago. Broad measures of employment are as low as the peak of the mid-2000 boom, with job creation coming at a healthy clip. But one important economic indicator remains disturbingly subdued, and that's wages. As we recently reported here on Financial Survival, wage growth has been superficially healthy only. In January, average hourly earnings did rise 2.9% from a year earlier, but consumer prices increased 2.1% during the same period. In other words, real hourly earnings, that is, earnings after inflation, grew by only 0.8%, and that's less than half the real growth rate of the overall economy. Meanwhile, the NFIB survey reports that 31%, almost one in three employers, are paying their workers more than last year. But this is also presumably unadjusted for inflation. Because inflation is positive in most years, wages tend to go up on average every year. But that doesn't mean workers are actually getting more purchasing power. The biggest wage gain since the recession came 3 years ago, 2015, thanks to a fall in oil prices that held inflation down while dollar wages rose. Now, inflation is back to a more normal level, but dollar wages aren't rising much faster, meaning that workers are pocketing fewer gains. Median real weekly earnings for American workers actually fell in late 2017 after hitting a plateau earlier last year. Melody?
Well, I have some idea of what's going on, but what do you think's going on, Dave? Why are low unemployment, strong business investment, and rising consumer confidence measures not causing faster real wage growth?
Well, let me tell you the, we'll call it conventional response to your question, and then perhaps you can tell us the real reason or reasons. We'll call it basic economics, at least. What the mainstream analysts are saying. The theory of supply and demand suggests that as labor markets get tighter, real wages should rise. Question is, why is the theory not working? Well, recent research by some economists has found that a rising concentration in labor markets, that is, a decrease in the number of employers competing for workers, has partially led to the suppression of wages. Now, again, economic theory says that when there are only a few employers, the supply and demand model breaks down, and powerful companies start holding wages below what a competitive market would provide. A second possibility is that low unemployment is making workers less productive. When layoffs loom, employees tend to work harder in order to keep their jobs. But when the economy reaches full employment, as it supposedly is at now, the pressure comes off. Labor productivity isn't perfectly correlated with wages, but it does have some effect. The third possible reason, Melody, is simply business owner caution after the long, deep, 9-plus-year recession. I'm sorry, the long, deep recession 9 to 10 years ago. Employers know that if they hand their workers raises, they won't be able to take those raises back if the boom proves to be short-lived. Hence, burned by the experience of a lost decade, companies may be holding off and raising pay more until they're sure the good times are really back. One thing appears certain. Unless economic growth starts translating into bigger wages for the average American worker, the boom's going to feel hollow to many people. And that's true especially coming on the heels of the Great American Tax Cut, when our leaders promised significant wage growth for workers in segments of the economy that will receive the smallest piece of lower taxes by far. Melody, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I agree with everything that you mentioned, but I think there's other structural problems that we have that prevents the wage growth that everyone has anticipated and is shocked because we don't have it. I think a lot of it is, you know, globalism. I think there really is a lot more to it than I think but we don't know. And I did have a report a long time ago, and I did talk about it. That and it's also it's how jobs are created anymore. The types of jobs that are active, a lot of them are contractors. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised, and you know, so the job structure. It's just not the corporation hiring somebody through the competitions, but it's how these jobs are being created, because these multinational corporations have done ways to where it saves them money. You know, that's the whole point. That's why they, you know, and people are trying to compete for something, for anything. So they often go out on their own. They're hired, you know, as contractors, and not just contractors, but I can't think of the term. So there is a lot of reasons, and maybe I can follow up on that later on and see. But you know, on another economic matter, Federator investor Steve Chivarone believes that the story of the year will ultimately be earnings, not really inflation. Last week, he said that earnings were set to grow about 20% this year. This just isn't financial engineering. You've got 8-9% revenue growth across the board. It's solid. It's sustainable. Some say Chivarone may be optimistic. Others, like here at us at Financial Survival, yeah, we think he's probably delusional. But in either case, he doesn't think investors will be spared from the wild springs along the way. But you have Jerome Powell, who's just started out as the Federal Reserve Chairman, and midterm elections are coming in November. Chivarone contends the stock market is vulnerable to more steep pullbacks on uncertainty, and says the dips would be an ideal time to buy. And of course, they're already planting the seed to make sure that when there are dips, you know, that they go in there and buy on the dips. And that's what these multinational corporations do with theirs. And we're going to talk about this on the stock buybacks. When do you think they buy their stocks, folks? When the stocks drop.
On the dips.
On the dips. So they make people think that, oh, everybody's buying on these dips. No, they're buying their own shares back on their dips. I mean, it's just, but
It's
anyway, huh?
an illusion. It would be funny. I guess it is on one level, to the respect that you've got to laugh or you'd scream out loud or cry, at the manipulation and the spin and the propaganda.
Yeah, it's, but you know what? Yeah, you can laugh, and I'm puzzled, and it's frustrating because people who really know money, and a lot of our listeners do, they understand the process, they understand the structure of what real money is, and they're being penalized with our fiat currency. And it's wrong. It's not right. It has created this it has created the system. The corruption is what I'm trying to think of. The corruption that we see and experience, and eventually, yes, folks, eventually, people are going to lose 70, 80% of their hard-earned money in their retirement accounts, their pension plans, their IRAs. And hey, take 50%. 50% is still a lot. And but there's many people out there who believe there will be much more that will be lost. And I can't even imagine where inflation will be at that point in time. So that's the sad thing about it. You know, it's kind of like that, you know, you have the you know, puzzled, you know, like, and yeah, it's like, how long can they keep this going? And but anyway, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent, but
No, the important words, important thoughts. And it's fascinating. Melody, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, in what I'll call a Wizard of the Oz moment, brushed aside signs that investors are nervous about rising prices and criticism that growing debt is going to harm U.S. economic security. Pay no mind to that man behind the curtain. He said last week there are a lot of ways to have the economy grow. You can have wage inflation and not necessarily have inflation concerns in general.
he's a
Huh?
nut. He's a nut.
Huh? He also said he's not concerned about foreign investment in the U.S. debt, which is going to exceed $1 trillion this year. He
He's a
reiterated
nut.
his belief that the tax cut package passed by Congress in December is very good for the economy. Jeffrey Gundlach, who we mentioned last week of Double Line Capital, skeptical about his assessment. He said, he
Hey,
said,
I'm gonna break in right there. We're gonna pick up from what Jeffrey Gundlach said when we come back. I hear the music. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I am here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And we are here talking about Steven Mnuchin, which I think he is a nut. I guess I could get in trouble. That's my opinion. That's one thing on radio. We all have an opinion. And I must say that right now that I don't even know where he came from other than Goldman Sachs. And but we were also talking about Jeffrey Gundlach of Double Line Capital before we were heading into break. And would you like to finish that up?
Yeah, just real briefly. I mean, just talking about him being skeptical about Mnuchin's assessment. He tweeted last week, if by miracle wages go up without inflation, that's not good for profits. If wages go up with inflation, that's not good for bond yields. So, much of the new U.S. debt is going to be bought by foreign investors. Foreign holdings of U.S. Treasury stood at $6.3 trillion as of the end of last year, hovering near a record amount and almost double the level when the recession ended in 2009. China, as we've told you, holds about a fifth of our foreign debt, making it the U.S.'s largest creditor. The director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, told the Senate Intelligence Committee 2 weeks ago that the U.S. debt, now at $20.8 trillion, is unsustainable and represents a dire threat to our economic and national security. And I'll turn it over to you at that point, Mel.
Well, you know, speaking of debt, Dave, as the largest reporting by the Treasury Department, the U.S. gross national debt rose by $41.5 billion last Thursday. To a grand total of the 20.8 that you just mentioned that they're declaring, and unfunded liabilities and so forth, there's, you know, 70 trillion, 80 trillion, even I can't remember who, I'll think of them here in a little bit, suggest that our unfunded liabilities is all the way up to 200 trillion plus. Yeah. And on September 7th, 2017, 5.5 months ago, just before Congress suspended the debt ceiling, the gross national debt stood at 19.8. The next day, it jumped $318 billion, and it continued. Over a period of 8 weeks, the gross national debt jumped by $640 billion. 4 weeks after that, it had ballooned to $723 billion. Then Congress served up another debt ceiling, a regular charade of lawmakers undertaking to extort deals from each other, beat the White House into submission, and keep the rest of the world on their toes. That debt ceiling was suspended on February 8th, at which point the gross national debt began to surge again, adding just shy of $1 trillion to our list of IOUs. That's a 5% jump in the gross national debt in just 5.5 months.
There's more to come, Melody. More to come. Probably at least another $1 trillion in the coming year alone. At least. The debt ceiling is like a caged rattlesnake. The snake won't bite because everyone's just looking without putting their hands inside the cage. But put your hands too close, all bets are off.
You know, Dave, the Federal Reserve's power to maintain a permanent bullish market in stocks and bonds is eroding. There's nothing natural about the so-called stability that we've had in the past 9 years. And, you know, we've been saying time and time and time again that this bullish trend in paper assets are just artificial concepts of Fed policies. It's quantitative easing. It's that they continue to feed the markets. It's being fed somehow, some way. These policies have reduced, or at least they've lost their effectiveness. And the era of this artificial stability is coming to a close. We've had a 9-year run of this illusion, and it's ending as a result of these melding of these five factors. You've got central banks in the U.S. and around the world that are under pressure to reduce and or reverse their unprecedented monetary stimulus. You have interest rates and bond yields may well plummet in the coming global recession. Even if yields plummet in the recession, you know, there's a lot of predictions that this doesn't necessarily negate the current trend of higher yields and rates. You have the global economy is overdue for a business cycle recession. The mainstream financial media is telling us that everything is going great in the global economy. But the sort of euphoric, it's all good news, typically marks the top of stocks. What happens to markets characterized by uncertainty? Once certainty is replaced by uncertainty, then you have markets become volatile, that fragile and exposed to sudden shifts of sentiment and rising volatility. So has anything really changed in the past 2 weeks? You know, the conventional bullish answer is no, nothing's changed. The global economy is virtually growing. Inflation is near zero. Credit is abundant. Commodities will remain cheap for the foreseeable future. Paper assets are not in bubbles, and the global financial system is a state of sustainable wonderfulness.
I love that term.
It's so good.
Sustainable wonderfulness. The way you say it, too, just I just
like that.
I picture piles of gold and silver in a beautiful floral meadow, sun shining down. Anyway, I'm sorry.
That's all right. You know, build the picture. we recently had a 10% decline in stocks. You know, and it's just, you know, healthy correction in a never-ending bull market, the result of flawed volatility instruments and too many punters picking up dimes in front of the steamroller. Picture that one. And then there's reality. Something has changed. Something important. What's changed? The notion that risk has magically vanished as a result of financial sorcery is now in debt. You know, a lot has changed. Again, we look at our weaker currency. We see that you might want to pick up here, Dave, where the Chinese yuan has appreciated about 10% against the dollar just since the start of 2017.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's muted some criticism, Melody, that the export giant China has been deliberately suppressing its currency to gain economic advantage over its trading partners, including us, the U.S. Some experts say this is all going according to China's plans. Although the strength of the yuan against the dollar is in part due anyway to the greenback's weakness, experts said the world's second largest economy is also propping up its currency to appease the U.S. president. One observer noted that, you know, this part was likely a response to the election of Donald Trump and the need to avoid being labeled a currency manipulator, as he had suggested on the campaign trail. That hasn't happened. He has not named China a currency manipulator, at least yet. Instead, the Chinese yuan rose almost 7% against the dollar last year. That reversed three consecutive years of depreciation. In January, in fact, China's currency extended gains by another 3.5% against the dollar. At the same time, Beijing repeatedly stressed its desire to keep the currency stable. It actually has managed to engineer this phenomenon against a basket of different currencies. Melody?
Well, you know, I'm not a fan of Warren Buffett, you know, but he's been coming out and saying some things that's kind of interesting. You know, he did say that the last place he'd want to be invested in today is in bonds, which I thought that was kind of interesting. I guess he's having his shareholder meeting, and you have CNBC in Omaha, and you know they interview him for hours and hours, and the guy's getting a little old, but I do believe he is an insider, and that's really what you know. But hey, his stock was, you know, $500, and it's what, $300,000 now.
Yeah.
That's That's what means when you're part of the, you know, part of the group.
the good old network.
But, I mean, he did come out and say that Buffett believes investors should avoid using borrowed money to buy stocks. And so now the truth is, well, he explained a lot of the perils of using debt and leverage in his 2017 annual letter to his Berkshire Hathaway shareholders. And that, as I said, it's going on now, and he released that on Saturday. CNBC reported this morning that U.S. companies currently have $642 billion in leveraged assets that they've used to buy other securities. That really is astounding, Dave.
Yeah, we'll have to look into that a little bit more and see how that compares to other times in modern history, and you know what that is as a, you know, a percentage of net asset value on in the different stock exchange. Yeah, on a more positive note, I mean, although gold just had one of its worst weeks in over 2 months, one expert says the precious metal is headed for a breakout. As listeners know, gold is often used as a hedge against inflation. However, interestingly, Carter Worth, who is Cornerstone Macro's head of technical analysis, argued that there's no relationship, at least reputable, between the two metrics. He said late last week, it's ambiguous what gold's role is as a hedge against inflation, but the thought that it has to go down when rates are going up is not established in any way. We'll have to look into that too. On February 21st, for example, the 10-year Treasury yield hit its highest level in 4 years, underscoring the jitters of some investors who are worried about rising prices. In fact, we know that since December, rates have moved on the 10-year from 2.35% to 2.95% a little over a week ago, and gold was up about 10% at the same time. Furthermore, Melody, while looking at a 10-year chart of gold, Worth noted that there are several bullish technical patterns forming on the chart. First, he says, there's a tension that's been set up since the peak in 2011. He calls it a head and shoulders bottom of sorts. A head and shoulders pattern refers to when a stock makes a high, rallies to a higher high, and declines back to the lower high. And he says this is the beginning of an important move higher, even though we've already we already moved quite nicely from the lows of September. And looking at his same chart, Worth noted that gold has also broken out of a wedge pattern. When there's a breakout from a wedge, he says, technicians often look to that as a bullish sign of an upward trend, and we're there. Finally, looking back 20 years, Worth compared the performance of gold to the S&P 500 index and the S&P 500 total return. What you see there is quite remarkable. Not only is gold beating the S&P on a 20-year basis, it's kept up with dividends reinvested. And he said, by my work, there's more to come on the upside. Well, that's certainly encouraging. Worth added that he thinks gold will be at the 1400 end by the end of this year. Melody, thoughts?
Well, I think we're going to see much higher numbers of gold. It's going to beat 1400 by a lot. I mean, heck, we're at 1331 now. So,
he hasn't read David Stockman, obviously.
Obviously, he hasn't read. He doesn't listen to Financial Survival, and perhaps. But I mean, there's a whole lot of reasons why gold will maintain. And one of the reasons, you know, when gold is attached to inflation, is because of our fiat currency. The more of those dollars that come into circulation, the weaker your dollar becomes. And of course, strengthening gold, and you could probably see gold reacting to several different situations, because eventually people turn to gold as that safe haven, because money's money, real money is money, and that's where they want to be. I did do a report one time where it showed the, and I, you know, I can't just pull it up. It showed, I think it was the three major rate increases since I believe, the mid-70s, and each time gold has done tremendous, had tremendous gains. And so there isn't any reason why we wouldn't see the same thing now. So he is correct. It's a thought that people think that because rates move higher, gold should go down. And that's not really the case at all.
You're talking about inflation rates now or interest rates? No,
Interest rates,
interest.
interest
Okay.
rates.
All right. Sorry.
Yes, interest rates. And that's just not necessarily the case at all. So, unless I misunderstood that this he was talking about interest rates also, or was he talking about inflation rates?
No, interest rates.
Interest rates, yeah. So gold, anytime there is, anytime, I mean, there's so many reasons why gold will respond, and gold will never go to zero. And that's what people don't get. All your paper is just promises to pay, and it can all go to zero. That you can all be wiped out. Gold will never go to zero. Silver will never go to zero. So again, this is something that's people, and you have real money, and people will always turn to gold. Your geopolitical risk, your inflation risk, your so many risks. And I think we're seeing a little bit of inflation in the stock market. And if you notice, if you've been following gold here lately, gold's also been going up with the stock market and has a tendency to go down when we've had a little bit of pullbacks in the stock market. So it's kind of following. And I remember we were in the same pattern back in 2008 and 9. I remember distinctly having a conversation with someone. I was like, yeah, I don't get it. You're having the gold following the stock market. Well, that was temporary, but so this could also be a precursor to a big turnaround in the, in the paper markets. So it's a great time to be buying gold at these levels, at these low levels. And people are frustrated with the price of gold and silver at these levels. But folks, that's the time when you buy. I'll guarantee you Warren Buffett buys low. And again, I'm not a fan of him, but hey, that's what he tells everyone. You buy when it drops. Everybody knows it, but few people do it. And it just baffles me. But give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We'll be returning here in just a few short minutes right after this break.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today.
today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Before we head on, we're going to talk a little bit about our newsletter, but, you know, I just love when people send me letters and tell me what a great job I'm doing.
Yes.
You know, somebody has to pat me on the back every now and then, but I get lots of these, and I don't share... It's all we talk about if I shared all the ones that I received. That's what the whole program would be about. But this one came in and it says, "Hello, Melody. Always a joy getting to talk with and do business with you. Thanks for taking such good care of me for over the last 23 years. Seems like just yesterday that he found the radio program on shortwave. As always, thanks for the continuing education. I do so much enjoy your voice of reason in a very unreasonable society. Thanks for all the stellar prices for his purchase. And thanks again." So, you know, it is true. And I almost think he always tells me I have a voice of reason. That was from Denny. He always tells me I have a voice of reason. And that's and it is true. Maybe I'll change the program to financial reason.
Reasoning. There you go.
Now we'll keep it financial survival.
Reasonable finances.
Reasonable finances. But
the reasonable voice.
But we've been around a while, and I want to thank each and every one of the listeners and clients for supporting Discount Gold and Silver Trading. You know, it's been an interesting 23 plus years, and to say the least. And that's why I get so frustrated sometimes, because I see what's going on, and I really learned this business from someone who really knew the in and outs, who knew all the players, who knew their backgrounds, who knew their histories. And so that's why I get so frustrated when I hear these folks misrepresent gold and misrepresent their programs. And I can usually spot a con job when I see one. And it's because I learned from the best. I really did learn from the best. And so anyway, enough of that. 1-800-375-4188. Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And people tell me too, Dave, it's like, you know, the only time people really talk about finances is usually when something nasty's happened. You know, they'll talk, you know, sure, you have your mainstream media programs that talk, you know, all day long, getting the money to flow in there and so forth. But a lot of the radio programs at the same venue that Financial Survival is in, very few of them will talk finances. And until the market crashes, then, of course, that's all they talk about. And we are a financial program. We are here to give you what we believe is the truth. And we just don't say the opposite of something just because we think it's we investigate. We try to pull the truth from the stats that we receive, you know, from the various governmental departments. So it is important to have a true financial program. And we also have a newsletter that comes out on Mondays. Most of the time, once in a while we're a little late, but American Survival Newsletter. And Dave also writes an article in today's newsletter. So you can go to the website, dgscoins.com, sign up for the weekly newsletter and get the article today. And it was about a study that was just released from the Kaiser Family Foundation, which projects that Medicare beneficiaries' average out-of-pocket health care spending is going to rise as a share of their per capita total income from 14% in 2013 to 17% in 2030. That's a 21% increase. And that projected increase, when measured as a share of per capita Social Security income, is more stark. It shows that out-of-pocket expenses would rise from 41% in 2013 to a whopping 50% in 2030. That's an increase of 22%. So, Dave, you point out that Medicare helps pay for the health care needs of 59 million people ages 65 and over and younger people living with permanent disabilities, yet people with Medicare can face large out-of-pocket costs such as premiums, your deductibles, cost sharing for the Medicare-covered services, and costs for services Medicare doesn't cover, like long-term care and dental services.
Yeah, Melody, Kaiser is reporting that half of all Medicare recipients live on annual per capita income of less than $26,200. Thus, out-of-pocket health care costs can pose a major challenge for those with modest incomes and/or significant medical needs. Average 2013 out-of-pocket spending on Medicare Part B and D premiums, that's sort of the major medical and the prescription drug program, plus cost sharing, averaged $3,246, or 23% of the average 2013 per capita Social Security income of $13,375. But average out-of-pocket spending on a Medicare recipient's total health care costs was $5,500, or, as Melody mentioned, 41% of average per capita Social Security income. However, that 41% average belies a logical but troublesome range that goes from 34% for Medicare recipients who are 65 to 74 to, get this, 74% for those 85 and older. And by the way, Kaiser projects the 74% to rise to 87% by 2030. Other demographics such as gender, race, income, and health status affect the level of out-of-pocket spending too. Now, as mentioned earlier, Medicare beneficiaries, this at the median, spent 14% of their total income on out-of-pocket health care costs in 2013. Total income includes income from Social Security and all other sources, pensions, 401ks, investment income, etc. The spending burden was larger for some of them. About a quarter of recipients spent close to 30% or more of their total income on out-of-pocket costs in 2013, while 10% spent nearly 60% or more. Not surprisingly, Melody, the healthcare spending burden, when measured as a share of total income, is lower than when measured as a share of Social Security income, because most beneficiaries receive income from other sources in addition to Social Security. It's pretty basic math. For example, based on income data from a company known as DynaSim3, average per capita Social Security income for all Medicare beneficiaries in 2013 was $13,375. That's in 2016 dollars. While total per capita income was $35,317. That's about 2.5 times more. So for a lot of people, there is some additional resources to fall back on, although not everybody. Mel?
And they might have some additional resources, but we have to think, prices are going to continue to rise, and these are, I'll guarantee you, they're going to be higher when we get there as we go along than what is predicted. So, it's interesting to see the average Medicare recipient age 85 and over spends 22% of their total per capita income on out-of-pocket health care costs. That's almost double what recipients ages 65 to 74 spent. And that amount for women age 85 plus was higher at 26%. It was just 17% for men in that age group.
Yeah.
But that's because more women are alive, probably.
Yeah, more women are alive. Women over their work spans, particularly those who are retired now, earned less money. More, probably a lot more women, particularly those 85 and up, probably spent more time at home raising children than their husbands did. Those are probably the main factors that can be attributed to that difference. But you know, the burden's going to grow over the next decade or so. A full 50% of Medicare recipients, Melody, are going to see their out-of-pocket spending go up from 14% in 2013 to 17% in 2030, as you said, while 25% are going to see their costs go up from 28% to 34%, and 10% will see an increase from 59% to 74%. That's of their total per capita income.
Well, we know this isn't going to continue, and I figured by 2030, I mean, it's all going to be bust anyway. I mean, they're all going, you know, the whole deal is everybody wants to attack the entitlements. So either it's going to bust on its own or, you know, we will be, that rubber band is going to break. Well, I think it's going to break before 2030. So, but based on today and based on these increases and everything, there's not a whole lot. I mean, you know people on fixed income, you know, what can you do?
Well, there's one thing not to do.
Don't wait for
Congress to help, particularly in any big way. I mean, as you alluded to just a minute ago, recurring budget and policy discussions have focused almost entirely on reductions in Medicare and Medicaid spending and Social Security benefits, changes that could adversely affect older adults living on tight budgets. The finding in the Kaiser study, Melody, suggests that rising health care costs could pose affordability concerns for those beneficiaries who get most of their income from Social Security. While proposals that would shift additional health care costs onto beneficiaries could increase the burden of out-of-pocket spending even more than it is already projected to rise.
You know, that report also noted Kaiser and others believe such proposals would have a disproportionate impact on seniors with the lowest amount of disposable income, those that can least afford to bear additional cost for health care.
Yeah, these changes could also reduce the value of the financial protections Medicare now provides to older Americans and those with permanent disabilities who happen to be younger. In addition, I mean, recently proposed changes to Medicaid eligibility and benefits were included in congressional proposals to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. Some of those, I believe, proposals are likely to come back in future budget proposals. As a way of trying to make these entitlement programs, quote, more sustainable for the long term. But they would likely mean higher out-of-pocket costs or skipping care altogether because of a lack of affordability for certain groups of beneficiaries who rely on Medicaid for helping to pay their Medicare costs. For example, many people in skilled nursing homes. Indeed, folks, the result of the Kaiser study suggests, in the author's own words, that, quote, efforts to strengthen and improve the protections offered by Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security may be needed to ensure greater retirement security for future generations of older Americans.
Yeah, but you know what? That's not going to happen. And again, you know, this country is not in a position. I mean, we just talked about the amount of the debt that is being created. Heck, by 2030, we'll be at $35 trillion in debt. This country will be broke. It's already bankrupt. It's been bankrupt for decades. Yet no one recognizes it. No one no one fixes the problem because it has grown to the degree that it can't be fixed, you know, and yet you have these programs. It's these entitlements, and it's like, well, help. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, a lot of the money was taken out of these programs to be spent in other places.
Well, and people call that intra-governmental borrowing. Masking the real federal budget
theft
deficit.
The real theft from people who put in Social Security money and of course probably never get it out. But a big problem, because you know, now that we're going to have jobs, we've talked about jobs, we've talked about wages, you know, they're not increasing. Technology is replacing jobs. I had an article this morning where, you know, the men in their prime working years have left the labor force at an astonishing rate, and they may never return if the state of the U.S. job market holds. There's a decline in demand. So, I mean, that's another problem. I saw a report, the guy who owns the Virgin Airways, what's his name?
Branson.
You know, oh, absolutely, there's going to be a basic universal income. Folks, you know, is that the world we really want to live in, that, you know, we get doled out, that we can't help ourselves? But it looks like that's where we're going. But if you buy gold and silver, that will protect your savings. That will protect you against these high rising costs for health care and everything else that is going to continue to increase. 1-800-375-4188. I'm sorry, Dave, we didn't get to talk about everything that you wanted to today, so we'll have to keep some for Wednesday. Until, folks, be safe, good night, and God bless. Left for me. That's too bad.